League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
What are we starting with this week?
A Spotify update.
No. Why did you both go for the
same? Review.
Yes, Luke. Aww. Well done.
Hey!
So this one says, 5 stars. So consistent with the quality of the episodes. Definitely one of the best podcasts out there. Super, super, super interesting every time and super funny. Thank you, guys.
That's very ironic because the last episode had a problem with audio and video not being in sync.
That is true. Well, there's a fixed version.
I'm going to blame it on the new studio.
Don't blame this wonderful, amazing, sexy little studio. Now, for you, if you want to leave us a review, you can go to Apple Podcasts, right? You go to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
You just type in a little review and hit 5 stars.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can leave a review. It's the only way it can happen.
That's very good.
You go to Apple Podcasts. Yeah. You find Sci Guys on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, leave your review. That's how you do it. A lot of people have been confused. We've been sent reviews in DMs.
Yeah.
Just go to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Anything less than that, your address gets immediately sent to the police.
They'll come and arrest you.
They'll come for you.
Whoa.
So I do have a question before we start. My question for everyone listening, get in the comments and answer it, is do animatronics creep you out?
Yes, very much so. Right. One of my big... Well, it's not so much... Yeah, like the Chuck E. Cheese style thing.
Are you in the comments? Creeps me out.
Yeah, I am in the comments. Well, okay. I bloody will be.
Okay.
Like the Chuck E. Cheese thing creeps me out, but my biggest fear is actually mannequins. I hate the idea of when I turn around and I never know what a mannequin's doing. They could be moving.
Let's start.
Not necessarily an animatronic, but you know.
Let's start the show. Hello and welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Cutfer.
I'm co-host. Good day.
This week, we'll be talking about realistic robots.
Could it have anything to do with the animatronics question?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. Yeah. The questions have everything to do with the topic every week.
No way.
Yeah. Have you not noticed? Have you not spotted that?
No.
Usually they do.
I have a little bit. A
little inkling.
The first couple of times I was like, is that a coincidence?
I've just been picking questions from my question hat. And it's just so happened.
What an amazing coincidence. All these weeks in a row.
Have you two heard of the Uncanny Valley?
Yes, from your Instagram story earlier today.
Well,
and also from other situations, but yes.
Yeah, this is the thing. I didn't realize this. So I did put an Instagram poll up on my Instagram story earlier today asking if people had heard of the Uncanny Valley. It turns out almost 60% of people haven't. 58% of people that follow me have not heard of the Uncanny Valley.
It's not a literal valley, is it?
No. It's not. It is.
Jeff, have you not heard of the Uncanny Valley?
No, it's something. It's like some fear response, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were talking about this last week.
Not last week, a few weeks ago.
Were we?
Yeah, in our Sophia the Robot conspiracy episode.
We were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah. If you want some background on this, you don't need it, but it's a little bit of fun. You can go watch the Sophia the Robot episode. Which episode number is it, Jemp?
117, I think.
Cool.
I hope so.
I trust it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
so the Uncanny Valley. Again, as I said, I thought everyone knew what this was. Evidently not. Apparently, it's just a niche thing.
We all grew up watching Vsauce.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah, that makes sense. So what is the Uncanny Valley?
So it is a phenomenon where as something that is attempting to look humanoid approaches but doesn't quite reach full humanoid status, there is this creepy little area where we find it deeply repulsive. So if you were to plot it on a graph, it would be like, I'm perfectly comfortable with these. Like a bear or like a toy or an action man or something. And then you get something like Sophia the Robot, where she looks like a sex doll, and then it drops off. Mm. And it's like suddenly, oh, I'm really uncomfortable here. And then it jumps back up again and you're very comfortable again.
Please don't objectify Sophia the Robot.
Use gingers instead. Say, that works, right?
Sorry, gingers do not trigger the Uncanny Valley response.
I would argue that some do.
As they approach human likeness, they're just missing the soul.
To be fair, I wouldn't know if humans trigger the uncanny valley response.
So sorry.
Being inside of a human ginger. Sorry, that sounds really weird.
Are you wearing a skin suit? What is going on here?
This is what I mean.
See, this is what when he said gingers. Something that's a when he said something that's attempting to like look like a human, that triggered me there. Just a little bit.
What, from every time you spend time with me?
Well, it feels like you're attempting to look human rather than simply being
Aren't
one.
Are we all?
I love to unzip my flesh just before bed. Take it off.
When you fall asleep in your flesh, and when you wake up in the morning, you unzip it. It just feels so much better, you know? Yeah. So the uncanny valley. Yeah, so you've got it there, Luke. Essentially, as something approaches looking like a human person, it gets more and more sort of... You sort of have more of an affinity towards it. And then very suddenly, you have a very negative affinity towards it. You do not like it at all. It creeps you out. And then as it becomes more human, as in almost exactly human, pretty much exactly human, you start to like it again. It's just this weird little bit in the middle.
Such as humans. They're quite human.
Yeah, humans are. Yeah. Humans are very human. Yeah. And we like how humans look.
Yeah.
But we don't like how, like Luke said, Sophia the robot looks. Another one is a great way to look at this is in animation. So if we think Pixar, right? Pixar is a great way to track this. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the characters of Toy Story, the toys, they're kind of human-y, right? They're fun. You know, it's like, oh, I love Woody. Yeah. He's nice. He's my friend. We can go on adventures together. Now, when you get to Sid from Toy Story, you think, oh God, what is this monster? Don't let it touch me.
Dear.
Yeah.
Now, if we get to Sid in Toy Story 3, I'm tracking it using Toy Story. We get to Sid in Toy Story 3, you know, where he's hitting on the bins and stuff, all the humans in Toy Story 3.
There are
a lot more, we're like, okay, that seems, they're not trying to be too human there, but it's not horrifying. And then in Toy Story 4, we have pretty much realistic humans, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. Where if you got films like Monster House, have you seen Monster House?
Yes.
That's horrifying.
Watched it earlier this year. Very terrifying.
It is a horror film for kids. Mm-hmm. And it is genuinely terrifying, probably because of the animation.
Yes.
The human characters are just so unnervingly off.
There's no soul behind any of the character movements.
Yeah, and the same goes for The Polar Express. Have you seen The Polar Express?
Yes, it's horrible.
So terrifying.
Tom Hanks plays every role, more or less, and it's produced by Tom Hanks, and I think written by Tom Hanks made this film for some goddamn reason.
And he did the animation as well, because that wouldn't surprise
me. That's
why
it's so bad. Yeah,
Tom Hanks opening up Cinema 4D. What do I do? Oh, well.
Tutorial.
Yeah, so these are just examples of the Uncanny Valley, right? So the idea is that something that isn't very human, it is not repulsive. It's, you know, it's you have not a huge affinity for it. As things approach humanhood, you've got more affinity. You like them more. You find them more sort of appealing. And there is this little bit in the middle, this little valley where it just drops. We might be able to get the graph up on screen because there's a graph that goes with it.
Yeah.
So the Uncanny Valley, do you know where it came from? Do you know how old it is? The idea.
Quite young, I guess. Say the 90s.
The 90s? It's a little older.
As in the term coined.
The term was coined slightly earlier than that, actually.
Does it come from like when they made like dolls? Like creepy dolls?
No. So it's...
Did it come after a film or some like big pop cultural thing?
It came after many films and before many other films.
When did Chucky come out?
He's gay? I didn't know that. Well, I thought he had a wife.
I think he's pan.
That makes sense. Yeah. And he's ginger as well. Yay. Which is why.
That's the Uncanny Valley. It's not the fact that he's a little demon.
That's the red hair.
Just the red hair.
Luke isn't in the room right now, which is why I feel so safe making these jokes.
He can't.
You may as well have just made an animation of me instead of recording me, because it would have been just as unnerving for you.
Yeah.
Actually, this is the thing.
I can't tell. You might be an animation. Well, because set up, I don't know.
If it was a more cartoony animation, it would be far less unnerving.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's out of that, uncanny valley. Yeah. So it was actually described in 1978, which in the year of our Luke is...
oh God. Minus 20... No? 78?
Yeah, 78. Minus 16?
Minus 14 or 16?
Yeah, 16 BL, like
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You were born in 94?
Yeah.
Cool, 16 BL.
There we go.
So... In 1978.
We're not the math guys.
No. 1978 AD, or yeah. 16 BL, it was described by a professor, a Japanese professor, Masahiro Mori. And he put this in, he basically put an essay sort of in a sort of magazine, I guess, or a sort of journal. A journal called Energy. It was just kind of ignored. It didn't really get much attention. But it's kind of picked up and gotten traction more recently in the past sort of, 10, 15, 20 years. I have no idea what year it is right now. I'm pulling those numbers out of nowhere.
21?
21? Past 15 years then, let's say.
Okay.
So the past 15 years or so, it started to become a more thought of idea. Specifically because of robotics and how robotics are advancing quite rapidly. We did the Sophia the Robot episode.
Yeah.
Sophia the Robot has human-ish skin. They've got a synthetic skin that then, means she can stretch her little robot face.
Yeah, but then she's got a completely transparent skull with a computer inside of it, which is what kind of gives, the gig is up, Sophia, we know.
But if she were to wear a wig, much like an Ex Machina, she'd be fine.
I was going to say, in Ex Machina, Donald Gleason does happily fall in love with her, so... Transparent head is apparently not too big of a problem when it comes to love, Jamp. Judgmental.
Yeah. I do want to point out that it's not Sophia the Robot that stars in Ex Machina. It is Alicia Vikander.
Just to clarify.
For anyone that might be confused, Sophia the Robot hasn't stepped out and taken an acting career.
Does she have any IMDb credits yet, Sophia the Robot?
She's probably got
She her, definitely
as,
will.
As herself, presumably.
Yeah. Right.
In
documentary.
Yeah, in stock footage or historical, whatever. I don't think she's.
Yeah.
I don't think she has the delivery, really. You know.
Oh, really?
I don't think she can. I don't think she has the emotional range, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So, as I said, the essay was in a journal called Energy, and it was a little bit ignored. It's kind of picked up over the years. So, it started off as something about robots. Which is quite interesting because that is kind of how it's spoken about now. Yeah. Although you might not have heard of it to do with robots. You might have heard of it to do with animation or other things like that. That's what we just had that big conversation there about. Mm. But animatronics, robots, things like that, those often trigger that uncanny valley response, which is why probably when you're in Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean, they got them so far away from you. You're not sitting...
And it's dimly lit as well.
Yeah, dimly lit and kind of far away. Because there are those movements, but if you were to see their faces, it's just a little bit like...
It's like the equivalent of having dark scenes and motion blur in visual effects. Just hide all of your mistakes.
So an example that he used in the original essay was a prosthetic hand, which it's an interesting example because that is something that... Since this essay was published, that would be about... 42 years ago now? Yeah, about 42 years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, prosthetic hands have become much more advanced, and we can have ones that look quite robotic, but we've got other ones that can look fairly realistic and not actually trigger that response too much. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, the idea that you brought up in the sort of, in the original essay, was that the prosthetic hand of the time had become quite similar to being human. They had ones that could have wrinkles and sort of different sort of marks on them that looked like skin. But the issue was that they were very pink and they just didn't have the color of skin. Right. So if you were to take a glance, you might think, oh, that is a hand, a human hand from a person. Yeah. But if you look more closely, looks there. That's, you'd look at it.
I honestly
like,
don't know what color my hand is.
It's a sort of pink.
Pinky.
That's kind of green right now.
Oh.
Why? Why? How
does... See a doctor.
Oh, hold on. Turn your hand to the camera. I do see a little bit of green in there.
The camera looks very different to
Matrix?
My eyes right now. I think it's just quite a green room. It doesn't look green though, so maybe I'm going mad.
Eco-friendly.
Maybe I've got a green filter over my eyes. Yeah. Who knows?
My glasses actually have... They're blue light glasses, which, by the way, is not that... I don't think they work that well.
It's not what it's cracked up to be.
I'm not sure if blue light filters work. They're, I do like them.
Yeah.
But sometimes I notice that they're just filtering out light. So when I take them off, I'm like, why does everything look orange? Like all of a sudden, or like when I put them back on, like things look orange, and then I overcorrect. It's like, oh, very strange. So again, that you're kind of getting the idea of the uncanny valley, if you didn't already, that it's when something approaches human, like sort of human likeness, mm-hmm. But doesn't quite get there. I mean, he talks about sort of shaking a prosthetic hand and that feeling different to a normal hand, all of these sort of things. Basically, this was a translation, by the way, so it's not the original Japanese that I read, because unfortunately I can't read Japanese.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a shame, right? No. Real shame. But that's what he goes into, and he talks about some other stuff in this essay, and it's quite interesting. I've read sort of an excerpt, which is very short. You could look it up in the sort of description below and have a little read. It's very nice. But also, what this kind of suggests is that this is used in a lot of different places, right? Like this is used in sort of robotics, as I've said. It's used in animation. Mm. And it's also used for understanding how our brain works, because we don't specifically know exactly how the uncanny valley sort of phenomenon works. So essentially what people say is that people have this idea that it can give you a sort of good idea to understand how to make artificial beings more familiar to humans or more liked by humans, mm-hmm. right? So if you've got people working with robots, which actually happens now, I mean, for a long time, even back in the 70s when this was written, people were working with robots, right? Car assembly lines, they're just robotic arms that do their thing.
Yeah.
People have been working alongside robots for a long time. But as robots become more and more advanced, it might serve well to make them look a little bit more human. So I think, is it Frank the Robot? Or is that a film?
I don't remember that, no.
I think that's a film. So there's a sort of multi-purpose robot that I think that is on the market that has not a human face, but just a very simple sort of, a simple face. It has a humanoid body. And obviously that's quite a step up from back when robots were just arms that were made of metal and looked like metal. And then you've got things like Sophia the Robot, which look more human, but are still like kind of weird looking.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the uncanny valley affects pretty much everyone from everywhere, right? If wherever you find people, people will be sort of affected by the uncanny valley. So this isn't a thing that's just in Western society. They've tested people from Dartmouth College. They've tested people from a remote tribe in Cambodia, and there's variation amongst individuals, but most people have this kind of reaction or some kind of reaction or response to things that sit in that uncanny valley of not quite human, which is interesting. And there's a few different ways of sort of measuring this and testing this. We'll get into that in a bit later. But the reason that I want to talk about the uncanny valley today is because in the last episode that we did about Sophia the Robot, we mentioned Daniel Hansen. Do you guys remember who Daniel Hansen is?
He's the guy who runs Hansen Robotics, who started the Sophia the Robot company.
That is, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Exactly. Yeah, so Hansen Robotics made Sophia the Robot. Daniel Hansen. He has a degree in film, and he worked for Walt Disney as an Imagineer.
Yes, yeah. The Imagineer.
Oh, yeah, this guy, I remember now.
PhD in aesthetic studies, yeah. And I mentioned back in that episode, you might remember, that he published an essay in 2005 about the uncanny valley in robotics. And I specifically said, I've got my notes here. It says, we'll do an episode on it. This is that episode.
Oh, great. Okay. Very good.
Wow. Yeah.
So we might not go too deep into what causes the uncanny valley sort of phenomenon today.
Yeah.
This is more sort of just discussion about Daniel Hansen's thoughts on it and some other cool things I found.
Yeah. Okay. Have you seen the TikTok about the uncanny valley that's been going around recently?
Oh no.
So there's a TikTok that's been going around that goes, the uncanny valley is this thing that means that you're uncomfortable around things that look almost human but aren't quite human enough. And that is evidence of the fact that previously in our genetic evolution, there were creatures, perhaps aliens, that looked almost human but not quite human enough, and we need to fear them. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh man, that would make Corey really angry.
My biggest question going into this was, okay, why is it a thing? But I can quite confidently say that's not it. That's not the answer.
What do you mean, Jack?
I'm not an expert, but I don't think that's the answer.
How can you rule out such a perfectly logicked out argument?
I can't fully rule it out, but if I had to place my bet, if I had to put my money on it, that's not it.
This is, we can't fully rule it out. And I'm not going to fully rule it out. Because I don't have all the data to do that right now, although some people will be able to, right? If you go look at the stitches on that TikTok, people will be debunking it for you.
Well, if there's evidence,
But then if you look at the stitches on the back of those people's heads from when they were abducted, Corey, I think you'll know, you'll find out that that is alien propaganda. They're trying to hide themselves from us.
You know what? I might be coming around to this idea.
Okay. Right.
So that's the Uncanny Valley, guys.
No.
Thanks a lot for watching.
No.
If you like this episode, please leave a comment and support us on Patreon.
We are not alone. Goodbye. What?
Oh, gosh. Guys,
almost human-looking aliens exist on Earth already.
Corey's in mental anguish right now.
So I did see that TikTok.
Murdering TikTokers.
I mean, maybe it's a different TikTok. It might be the same one, but I hope it's the same one, because if there are multiple similar ones going around, that is
Definitely is, Corey. Have you never been on TikTok? There's about 500 of every popular TikTok.
Yeah, okay. So I saw one that basically that went into the same sort of thing, saying, it means that there was an animal. I think they said, there was a predator of humans that looked very similar to humans at some point in our history, and we had to develop to know how to discern them from people. I don't know if I saw the one.
We kind of know that there were other humanoid, there was like, and they had wars and stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's
we know that they fought each other.
They didn't look like robots, I assume.
Yeah.
No, don't have to look like robots.
It's not about looking like robots.
Almost human.
If it looks like a robot, then it's fine.
Yeah,
because if it looks like Bender from Futurama, right, that's fine. If it looks distinctly like if C-3PO, not creepy, right?
Reflective. You just have to be scared of reflective surfaces instead. Reflective humanoid surfaces.
Sure. Now,
my greatest fear.
Right. So, it's not about necessarily looking like a robot. I think the issue is specifically that it doesn't. You can't quite tell which one it is because it looks almost entirely human, but something is just off. Gives you that sort of ick. Now, the TikTok that I watched, I don't know if it went into the aliens thing, which is an interesting one. That one I would say is pretty much out. If unless we killed all the aliens somehow.
There's a few more assumptions that go into that.
Yeah, there's be any historical records of that at all. Anyway, so this idea, it bothers me because it takes this thing where there is an idea of the uncanny valley, right? You've got the evidence of this, and people think, well, what is an interesting way that could what is an interesting reason for that to have come about? And you could say, it would make sense for predators. This is really good, by the way, if you're writing a sci-fi novel. Be fantastic. If you're like, where did this thing come from? Well, it actually came from this sort of predator sort of predation in the past. Now, the reason that we can't do this is because a claim like this would need a lot of evidence. It would need more evidence than simply the uncanny valley effect. Because the uncanny valley effect has any number of reasons behind it.
Yeah.
For example, just the fact that humans very much try to understand faces. Like we're wired up for understanding faces, and we're very good at discerning what is a face and what isn't a face, generally, right?
Yeah.
But if something is very close, but some things are off, then you can get confused. And that results in disgust. You could also
dissonance.
Yeah, and there's also the idea that illness and sickness, right? If, for example, a corpse is it is repulsive, right? Generally, corpses are repulsive because they are very human, but they're also just a little bit off. And that's actually something that is wrought up in the original essay as well. That a corpse is unmoving and it looks entirely human, but it's gone pale and it doesn't move. And when you see a dead animal, right? You know that the animal is dead and not sleeping, right? Mm-hmm. You can see it. Like you can see it.
Really?
I've seen multiple dead animals recently and they look. I have.
Good. Don't question it.
Yeah, don't ask. It's going about my life, seeing dead animals here and there.
Okay.
But generally, like you can see and feel this difference, right?
Yeah.
And it is.
There's a stillness to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this a kind of quiet because you got to remember when you're looking at a person, there are all these different sort of inputs that you're getting from them. Right. And you're not necessarily aware of all of them, but when they're not there, it's a silence that you're kind of like, ooh, you feel it. And with a corpse, right. So with a corpse, it looks entirely human, but it is not moving. It is slightly pale. It's just off. And people are kind of disgusted by corpses. So one idea is that the uncanny valley comes from that, the sort of avoiding death, avoiding disease, avoiding things that make humans look just a little bit off, And there's a sort of evolutionary purpose to that, right? Yeah. So if you avoid death and disease, you're less likely to die yourself from diseases and whatnot. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sure, the predators that look almost exactly like humans makes perfect sense. And I'll tell you actually why that doesn't make perfect sense. Luke, you brought it up. There were a number of different species that shared the Earth with species similar to them, the sort of Homo species. So there was we were Homo sapiens, obviously, but yeah. there were also Neanderthals.
Mm-hmm.
There were different species of sort of we're Homo sapiens sapiens. There were different Homo sapiens about, mm-hmm. right? We shared the Earth with them. We shared the Earth with Neanderthals. We had wars with them, but we also interbred with them. In fact, there's people with a lot of Neanderthal DNA right now, right? Kicking Amazing. About.
Everyone has a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, as in there's some people with like quite a bit.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some people that have got more than others. And so they have more traits that seem sort of Neanderthal-y.
Yeah.
We don't look at those people and think, ugh, not human, weird, right? Like it's...
Yeah.
It just baffles me that it's almost like, so we have you guys heard of the cross-race effect?
No.
You sure?
I don't think so.
I think we might
have talked about it before. It
sounds familiar. So the cross-race effect, it's this thing that has been noticed wherein people have trouble recognizing sort of differences between individuals of a different race than what they are used to. Not necessarily their own race, just the race that they're used to. So if you take, say, an Asian kid and raise them entirely among white people,
mm-hmm.
they'll discern white people fine, but they might have trouble differentiating traits between black people, right?
Right.
I mean, we could maybe do an episode on this. I've looked into it over a year ago, about 2 years ago now, I think.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a decent backing for it. If this is something that isn't as the way that I'm sort of presenting it now, let me know in the comments, but I'm fairly sure this is the way it is. So the cross-race effect, yeah. If you're used to people of a sort of certain race, then you have trouble differentiating features of people from different races, which can be solved, by the way, just by being around people, just experiencing many different people, and then it more or less it's goes fine. Away. Yeah. But that's like saying, oh, the cross-race effect actually comes from the fact that all races are totally different. They're just, they're sort of convergent evolution, right? They came together sort of closely. And it's like, we can't tell badgers apart. You look at two badgers and you try and tell which badger is which. You don't know.
It's true.
So it's the same for different races.
There's a whole
Rick
and Morty
species.
Episode about exactly that, Corey. Yeah.
Unless you're raised by badgers.
Oh, the snakes.
About how the human eye is blind to turkey faces.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the Thanksgiving one. But like, actually, though, try and tell two turkey faces apart.
No idea.
No. We're better with dogs. We're better with other things that we spent time around. But even then, if two dogs have got the same coat color and are roughly the same size,
mm-hmm.
looking at their faces, it's tough
to
tell.
Two dogs you've never seen before.
It's tough to tell them apart, right? Whereas humans, we can do that fairly easily. And, you know, obviously cross-race effect sort of limits the ability to do that with groups of people that you're not used to. But again, just hang around with people that aren't all the same race as you're used to, and it'll be fine. But my point here is that finding some quirk of human, sort of the human brain, and saying, yes, this is due to this big and world-changing thing. No, you need some evidence for it. Yeah, maybe some more evidence than just something kind of exists. Yeah.
The first thing I thought of.
Exactly. Something that sounds cool on TikTok.
Yeah, right?
Jesus. Slight tangent. I've been thinking about this. We would be amazing on TikTok if we just did not care about accuracy.
We
could make up loads of conspiracy theories.
We could. I feel like Luke is a little conspiracy machine. We could just churn him out, right?
You could literally give me anything and I could come up with some weird way to make it make sense that doesn't actually make sense.
You just say to Luke, hey, Luke, make a conspiracy theory about lampposts. Go ahead and do it.
Lampposts?
Yeah, lampposts. Yeah.
Well, every single lamppost is connected to the mains and has a little camera hidden inside it, and it's looking at you all the time.
It's pumping 5G directly into your house.
Exactly.
All of them.
Exactly. There you go. But seriously,
lampposts are there so that satellites can see you from space.
So aliens can see you easier from space.
Alien satellites. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, but if genuinely, it takes so much more effort to try and be accurate, mm-hmm. and there is one person in particular who has God, I think 13 million followers on TikTok.
Oh,
who got into some trouble for racism, but also who has just no care for accuracy, doesn't list sources, doesn't go back and fix things, just has turned off Stitches and Duets because people are correcting them.
Is actively like, do not correct me, please. You have nothing to add. I'm just going to say whatever I want.
And it's like all these little psychology tricks and things like that. It's just like this.
Yeah.
You're just Googling stuff.
Yeah.
And repeating it. There's no semblance of sort of accuracy here.
But I feel like that is also a platform problem because the platform literally only cares about what keeps you on TikTok and what keeps you interacting. Like, if the platform was disincentivizing that, like if you said something that turned out to be untrue, your account was then downregulated slightly, that would disappear pretty quickly. But
the same happens for every platform.
Of course, because they're all maximizing for session time.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair point to make. I just feel like we can't, when we say, oh, this is a platform issue, it's definitely a platform issue that stuff gets, it's definitely a platform issue that there is not some kind of system in place for sort of accuracy or truth. I mean, we've seen it with COVID. In fact, now that I've said this, there might be a little thing, I've said that one word, there might be a little thing below this video telling you all the facts about that sort of pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't
implement... Which one, Corey? Which one? Say it again.
No. no.
COVID.
Yes.
COVID.
We're able to implement it for that, right? But for other things, we don't. YouTube has that problem of people falling down rabbit holes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. I think there's definitely an issue with platforms and more can be done. But when we say, oh, it's a platform issue, I feel like we let the people with 13 million followers who are essentially peddling sort of 40 to 50 to 80% lies and misinformation out to an audience of, you know, like millions. Mm-hmm. We just let them off the hook.
Yeah.
Because sure, you can get very, very...
A lot of young kids that will just believe it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an older person. Of course I'm going to believe them.
I saw Hank Green respond to someone saying that you should not to listen to the advice of air stewards or air hostesses when you're in a plane crash, because what they tell you, because airlines want you to die so you can't sue them. So they're telling you basically the way that will make you die quickest and easiest.
If you die, they've lost a customer.
Yeah, but also people can sue you your family can sue after you're dead, right?
Like, oh yeah, true as well. Like, it's probably more likely to as well.
It's not like airplane crashes work on the sort of like, well, everyone there died, so no wrongdoing, right? No. But that stuff, like people that do that are the problem as much as the platform is, right? Yeah. The platform wouldn't need to implement these things if people weren't just awful. But then you could say it's the platform, but then Fox News. They do that.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's sort of everywhere throughout our society. But back to the Uncanny Valley, I think. Yeah.
Is the Learn tab still a thing on TikTok? Or is that gone? Because I swear that type of content was getting on the Learn tab.
That left quite... I don't have the Learn tab anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Yeah, now, to be fair, there are some really great TikTokers. In fact, I've got a lot of really great science TikTokers that I follow. Renegade Science Teacher is very good.
Mm.
I think... Is it Dr. Karan?
Yes, I follow him.
Very good. I mean, there's so many really, really good people. Hank Green, obviously. So many good people on TikTok just giving out good information.
Mm.
Seen a lot of people start to source their TikToks as well, which is TikTok. It's not easy to source stuff, but people are going through the effort to do it. And it is just great to see. So much of that comes up on my feed. And a lot of it influences things that I end up thinking about that come onto the show.
Yeah.
So if you've got a TikTok, definitely follow those people that we just mentioned.
100%.
Yeah. Shall we get back to the Uncanny Valley?
Do you put those TikToks in the sources, Corey?
When we do bonus episodes, a lot of the bonus episodes are around the TikToks. But I don't source TikToks if I've just been thinking about something.
Okay.
If I ever get an episode topic from TikTok, I will always say that.
Credit to the creator.
I'll always credit them. I'll always say that. But no, I don't think I've taken a full episode topic from a TikTok, apart from the bonus episodes on Patreon, which you can get, patreon.com/SciGuys.
That's patreon.com/SciGuys. But the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, the Uncanny Valley. Yes. So,
Daniel
Hansen. Yeah.
I was going to say Newman for a minute, and I was like, that's not right.
No, not a Newman.
Hansman.
So, Daniel Hansen, his Uncanny Valley paper. It's interesting because what would you think, understanding the uncanny valley, right? Understanding that as we try to approach humanness with robots, we like them less, essentially.
Mm.
What would your solution to that be? How would you, if you were developing robots, what would you make them look like in order to sort of get around the uncanny valley? Or taking the uncanny valley into account, how would you build your robots? Would you make them more human-like, knowing that you could never get them to be so human that they are sort of not weird? Would you make them less human? What would you do?
Personally, I wouldn't even attempt humanish mm-hmm. features. I would just be like, make robots cool and not human. We're human. We see humans every day. We can make other cool stuff that's not, you know.
So like the Interstellar robots.
Yeah, stuff like that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, right.
The guy with the legs, it's like those cartwheels all the time.
Yeah. So that's where you're going. Like, don't even make him humanoid at all.
Yeah. No. Yeah, we can make other cool stuff.
Cool. Yeah. Luke, what 100%. Would you do?
I'd say if you have robots that are needing to interact with humans and needing to make humans that don't necessarily understand or care about interacting with robots comfortable, I'd probably go down the route that like Pixar take, where you're making something that is clearly a cartoon, like clearly not trying to be a photorealistic person, but it's still trying to trigger all the same sort of things. Like it's trying to trigger emotional responses and be able to portray intent and portray sort of thought process and an emotion, right? So you have a sort of layer like in the face that's like an interface for you to understand the intent of that person in the case of Pixar, or to understand the intent of the robot, which would be harder if you were doing it on something like the things from Interstellar. But then for robots that don't need to interact with the general public, you don't need to make them humanoid.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you guys terribly. I actually take both from take a little bit from both. Like the robots from Interstellar, what's interesting about them is that there's this human aspect to them because they've got a voice.
Yes.
A very human-like voice. They've got personality to them.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's not in a human shell, it's, this is a person. You know, in the same way that you watch Toy Story and they move like people, but they're toys, and they speak like people, but they're toys. And so you can kind of relate to them. Even the brave little toaster, things like that. You put a little face on something, you're like, oh, it's nice. I like that. I would kind of go down that route of saying, okay, here's what we do. We take a level of humanness that is fun and interesting and nice, like a cartoon character, like a hand-drawn cartoon character, basically uses almost emoticons for a face, right? You know, have you seen The Mitchells versus the Machines?
Yes.
Yeah,
I love that film. Yeah.
Great film. Fantastic film. There's the two robots in that. They've got the sort of their face is just a screen,
mm-hmm.
but it can emote in some, like they've obviously,
like emojis or emoticons.
You can maybe it isn't those robots, but there are screens in that film that basically have like emojis for a face.
Yes,
which is great. They've got a voice coupled with emojis. That's all you need, right? I don't feel like we need to get superhuman. We just need to get enough so that we recognize them as a person,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, recognize their personhood, but not so much that we feel creeped out by them.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that we sort of we can attribute humanness to different things.
Actually, there is I don't know if it's in Prometheus or the other one. What's the other one called? Covenant. But there are in whatever film it is, there's two robots. Both are played by Michael Fassbender,
mm-hmm.
and one of them has no emotions, and the other one was given emotions. The more advanced version had emotions,
mm-hmm.
and these two robots have a conversation at one point, and one of them's like, "Why did I become? Why did they make you? Why did they make a more advanced version?" And the more advanced version goes, because they wanted to feel like the robots were human. They wanted a less creepy robot, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's literally like just adding the emotion to it that kind of helped.
It does help.
I mean, that is a film. It's not true, but I feel like it's true.
it is a film, but it does. I mean, we do like things to be a little bit more sort of personal.
Yeah.
And here's a little thing. Post-it note, okay?
Yes.
Post-it note. Watch this. Right, I've ripped it.
For the listeners, he has ripped it.
That was kind of sad.
For the listeners, watch the episode on YouTube.
Yes, youtube.com/SciGuys, I'm pretty sure.
So, second post-it note.
Oh, no.
His name is Jeff.
Oh, no. Don't give him a name.
Look at him.
Don't Jeff. Give him a name. Oh,
he's ripped Jeff. It. Oh, that's sad.
Hurts a little bit more, doesn't it? Just a little bit more. Really, though. Genuinely, if you put a face and a name on something, you just feel a little bit more attached. It's so weird that we just... We like stuff like that, you know?
Everyone write, rest in peace, Jeff, in the comments, please. I'm really feeling for Jeff.
please, a candlelit vigil in the comments for Jeff.
Yeah.
RIP Jeff. Yeah. A little candle next to it.
We'll live stream the funeral service.
You can live stream the funeral service. I am not getting involved. I need to hide from the police. I have just murdered Jeff.
Wanted for post-it and murder.
So Hansen has a completely different idea from us. He says, this is the sort of conclusion to his little essay. It says, for realistic robots to be appealing to people, they must attain some level of integrated social responsivity and aesthetic refinement. We contend that realistically depicted human-like robots serve as an unparalleled tool for investigating the full range of nuance in this pursuit. In our experiments, our robots have demonstrated clearly, once and for all, that we can better understand social intelligence by rendering the social human in all possible detail. So he says, now just push it. Like, keep going. Try and push past through the uncanny valley. Mm. Which I feel like even knowing that something was a robot, right? It would freak me out just a little bit. I feel like having the knowledge, the only way to get past the uncanny valley with a robot is if I had no idea that it was a robot. Like sort of Blade Runner, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not weird in the robots, the replicants in Blade Runner aren't weird because you don't know who is one, right? You're not necessarily fully aware who is and is not a replicant. But as soon as you know that someone's a robot, you're like, I don't like this.
But you weren't brought up around them. It's very possible that if you were brought up around them, then it would be totally normal that you just interact with. There's just two different types of people. There's the flesh ones and there's the robot ones.
So coming out as a replicant.
Yes. This is the thing. I actually think about this sometimes. What takes do I have now that are going to be sort of awful, horrible, like very offensive takes in the future?
Yeah.
For example,
robophobic.
Not seeing robots as people. Like, I can imagine being like 50 years old, having a kid being like, "Dad, you can't say that anymore." What? I can't say robot? He's a robot. He's not a person. Like,
Dad, you're being cancelled over a 20-year-old Sci-Guy episode.
Wow. Like honestly, if it is robots, if I at some point in the future start feeling like, you know, it's okay, I'm fine with people having sex with robots, but you have to admit it is a little bit weird. If that becomes a sort of nuclear take,
that is
50 years in the future, fine.
That might be a nuclear take now.
Man, that is problematic. Yeah. I'm with you, future people watching this to cancel Corey.
Whoa, hold on. You got to remember, if you're watching this from the future, this is of its time. You know, the things that are the events and
no, to be fair, I reckon if you tweeted that now, you'd get some shit for it.
I'm tweeting it right now.
Go on.
It is weird to have sex with a robot. I'm doing it. Sorry. Immediately, I've got a response from Taha saying I hate having a Twitter account. So
oh my God.
So, yeah, look. Back to the uncanny valley. So, Daniel Hansen has an interesting sort of view to this, where he wants to try and push past it. It seems, you know, he thinks that there is benefit to having robots exist in the uncanny valley. It seems that he thinks that it gives us a deeper insight into how humans work. And you can get through the uncanny valley we can see Sophia, right? You go back to the Sophia the Robot episode, you can understand this a little bit more deeply. But essentially the idea is that if you make robots function more effectively socially with humans, then you could maybe try and push through that uncanny valley. Again, I disagree. I'm robophobic and I don't want human-like robots. I can't.
As long as they keep it to themselves and they don't do it in public.
No, I'm fully joking, right? I'm an ally to all robots. You know, okay. I love them all equally.
Okay. Question:
I'm not robophobic, but
so, Corey, the thing you were saying about the race exposure to different races,
cross race effect, yeah.
Okay, so like if you just heard about that, you heard like the initial data, which is that somebody is less able, because most people will be raised, or at least in the past, were raised amongst the race that they are, right? An initial hearing of that information would say that white people can only recognize white people's faces, or black people are only able to recognize black people's faces, or Asian people are only able to, et cetera, et cetera. And then you find out that actually it's to do with the exposure to the face. So it's not set in the genetics, for example, it's learned an exposure to that race, right?
Yeah, so I just want to be clear that it's not a case of it's not recognizing faces. You can still recognize faces as
differentiates.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. it's fine. I just want to be clear. So
yeah,
no one takes the wrong thing. Yeah. So you can recognize all the faces. It's just discerning one face from another, right? Yeah, it is. So yeah, it is learned. Sorry, what was your question?
So my point goes is that because it's learned, it's mm-hmm. not genetic, for example. So it's to do with who you're raised around as opposed to the race that you are. Would that then mean you could potentially extrapolate that out to suggest that it could be, at least could be, that the uncanny valley is not something in us as people, in like, we're not born with the uncanny valley. If we were exposed to kind of almost humanoid, uncanny robots, we might classify them as non-threatening. We wouldn't get that response.
I mean, maybe I've not delved super deep into the sort of reasons for the uncanny valley this week. For another episode, definitely we could go like super deep into the uncanny valley. But I'm not sure. Maybe that would be interesting. Although I have read some papers that would suggest to me that that's not necessarily the case. That it is something okay. that's more innate. But then again, yeah, I don't know if there are any studies specifically looking at whether more exposure to sort of non-human but near human faces would sort of decrease or alter the uncanny valley effect. Like I said, I do know that some people experience it more or less than others. And actually, I did find this one study that was looking at autistic children, which I found very interesting. Now, it was a small study. It had about 20 or so participants. And so I wouldn't extrapolate this out to all autistic people because it's a very small study. Mm-hmm. But there was some evidence that autistic children weren't necessarily affected by the cross-race effect, not the cross-race effect, by the uncanny valley effect.
Mm.
It wasn't quite affecting them. So these kids were between 5 and 7.4 years old. And because it was a study on autistic children, they were all boys, apart from one who was a girl.
Oh.
Wow.
Because as we all know, girls can't get autism.
No.
We've learned
autism is underdiagnosed in girls.
Incredibly underdiagnosed in girls, yes. And
do you know if the uncanny valley effect is something that like young children experience? Is there any suggestion of that?
Yes, that's interesting. So before 12 months, not at all. But that's... remember, kids can't recognize much before 12 months. They can obviously start recognizing faces, but... That wouldn't necessarily suggest that it's a learned thing, right? It's before 12 months, there's nothing at all. Other studies weren't able to find the uncanny valley effect in kids of that age, between 5 and 7.4 years old, but this study did. Again, these are small studies, so more research does need to be done on it, obviously. It is interesting, actually. Now that you say this, that has reminded me of another study that I read called Age-Related Differences in the Uncanny Valley Effect. This was published in 2020. And the idea behind this study is that, you know, this is the sort of background of it. It says, because birth rates are declining, there are fewer people to take care of the increasing sort of aging population.
Mm.
So one solution to that would be to use robots to care mm-hmm. for the oldies, you know? Just put them in homes.
Yeah.
Chuck some robots in there. They live like Wall-E. It's great. Let them go.
I hope they don't live like Wall-E, abandoned on a planet full of trash.
Sorry. Let me rephrase. They live like in Wall-E.
Yeah.
You know? They sit and just and grow large and you know, don't really do much.
Make big cubes.
Well, that was an Owen Wilson. Sorry, you're thinking of Cars? That's a slightly different film.
Wow.
Yeah, that's Cars.
Oh, ka-chow.
Now that's Wall-E. This has been a very Pixar-heavy episode.
Hasn't it? Not sponsored.
This is the thing, because, like I said, old people are continuing to exist, and there are fewer young people coming about. We need to look after them. Maybe using robots would be a good idea. Now, it is interesting, because the Uncanny Valley effect is slightly greater in older people, apparently.
Yeah.
Or rather, older people tend to sort of not accept robots as much as younger people. So there is obviously some learning aspect to this in that we become more comfortable with robots because, you know, we're around things like that all the time. Mm. I mean, I assume someone that has never had a smartphone would be somewhat uncomfortable with Siri because, yeah, you know, Siri. Whereas I think of Siri as a lovely friend that sometimes, you know, does things for me.
Why is there a person in my pocket asking me so many questions?
We're not taking them from the Victorian era.
There's a suggestion there that older people, it's not that later on in life, the brain is more likely to reject, like the uncanny valley widens, for example. It's just that older people have not had as much exposure to technology or to modern technology or robots.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one hypothesis. Again, I've not looked super deeply into this, so I don't know whether or not there's been a lot of research on specifically that question of whether it is because when you get older, you just become more discerning, or whether it's because elderly people have had less experience with robots. I would be inclined to believe that it's to do with the experience. Obviously, if you spent the majority of your life without sort of humanoid robots being a norm, or like sort of more humanoid, more robotic things being a norm, then you're going to be sort of maybe less comfortable with that. That makes sense to me. The idea of the brain becoming more discerning over time makes maybe a little less sense to me. I feel like you'd have to do a very specific thing to look into that.
You know, maybe they just want their bloody grandchildren to look after them and they're pissed off.
They should have had more kids.
That's it. You're right, Corey.
It's their own fault.
Your fault.
And also, look, I feel like it's incredibly offensive to not treat those robots as some people's grandkids because they were made by people.
Sure.
Or they were made by robots that were made by people. Yeah. So if anything, they are as much family as children are.
Yeah.
Grand robots.
Yeah, but that's
grand
okay. Robots. Well, obviously, if you're in a care home, you're being looked after by someone's grandkids. It doesn't mean that you don't want your grandkids.
Well, then what if you just have all of your grandkids make a robot to look after you? Are you robophobic,
maybe,
Luke?
Maybe you'd be thrilled by that, Corey. No, Corey, I'm not you.
I think we're all a bit robophobic.
Wow. Why? No, hold on. Wait, why am not I as much the robophobic as Corey. One?
Implicit I'm not bias. Robophobic.
You said that you think it's weird that people have sex with robots.
That's because I'm not a robophile. It doesn't mean I'm a robophobe.
Yeah. You're either a robophile or a robophobe, Corey. There's no in between.
So the idea was to sort of look at older people and see whether, look at different groups of people and see whether the uncanny valley effect varies or changes across different age groups. And they found that the uncanny valley effect was in younger and middle-aged adults, but older adults apparently did not show the uncanny valley effect. Earlier, sorry, I misremembered. Earlier I said that the elderly had a stronger uncanny valley effect. They don't have a stronger uncanny valley effect. They just have less familiarity, less acceptance for robots.
Right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So maybe the brain becomes less discerning as you get old.
Oh.
So less discerning, but more hating of robots.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. It's just like gays. Like, you know, old people can't tell what a gay is, but they hate them, don't they?
Oh, I know. I don't like them.
I know them when I see them.
They don't.
No, as long as my grandkid's not a robot.
Oh, that's a lovely flag you've got in. I love the purple blue and the purple blue and pink there, Timothy. What a wonderful flag. I'm glad you're a straight, Timothy. Not like those.
No son of mine's going to be a robot.
So, oh my God, I don't even know where I am anymore. So, obviously, there have been different ideas for what causes the uncanny valley effect, and we could do a whole episode on it, but we'll just touch on some now. I mean, we could talk about Masahiro Moro. Remember Masahiro Moro?
Talked about him quite a little bit earlier, didn't we? Earlier today, we've talked about a lot.
It's the guy that coined the term.
It's the guy that coined the term.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's exactly the guy that coined the term Uncanny Valley Effect.
So. I didn't think that was Daniel Hansen by accident.
No. Yeah. Well remembered. Thank that you. It was Masahiro Moro. So. His idea was, I've kind of mentioned this earlier, his idea was that when you sort of when you die, you stop moving, you go cold, you become pale, and so you sort of, that approaches, that's kind of where the uncanny valley is, right? It's the uncanny, dead corpses are in the uncanny valley. Mm-hmm. And his idea is that is that there is the sort of secret behind the uncanny valley is that you get this weird sensation when you're around things that are human but aren't quite human, because often that means corpses,
like,
or corpse ill
being
people
puppeted.
or just it doesn't need to be moving, but the fact that the corpse isn't moving but looks entirely human triggers the uncanny valley effect.
No, of course, but I mean, if you're around a robot that's kind of not very expressive and is a little bit off color, etc., it looks like a corpse being puppeted from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that in our past, there were some predators who puppeted human corpses to trick us and lead us astray.
No.
I'm so glad we've got to the bottom of this, Corey. Thank you very much.
There's actually another graph that we can show that is a little bit more complex.
Yes, please.
This takes moving and unmoving objects into account as well. And unmoving objects can't quite get the same affinity. You don't like them as much as you like moving objects, you know. Like a stuffed animal is not going to be as sort of, you're not going to have as high an affinity for a stuffed animal as you might for, say, a humanoid robot that doesn't have sort of human features, you know.
If you had a stuffed animal and you measured our familiarity and like how much we like it, and then you just had the stuffed animal moving, we'd like it a bit more.
Well, it's more that a stuffed animal doesn't move. It's not a moving, it's not something that is made to move, right?
But what if you made something to move, but then you didn't move it?
It was just sat still.
Like if I was sat still and you rated how much you liked me, it would be like 80 out of 100. And then if I go, woo!
These aren't specific
numbers. 95.
These aren't specific numbers. This is more of a thought experiment.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So in theory, a stuffed animal sits more in the uncanny valley.
No, not more in the uncanny valley. The point is that there's, I'll show you the graph, right? There's two different, So there's two different lines here. So you've got the dotted line here, which is for objects that move. There's the solid line for things that don't move. Now, the affinity doesn't go quite up as high for things that don't move, but it goes up higher for things that do move. Mm-hmm. And the point here is that's why a zombie is going to make you very uncomfortable, right? More so than a corpse, because a zombie isn't supposed to. It's something that moves, but isn't supposed to.
And it's chasing me, probably.
Right? It's chasing you, probably, as well. That's why the undead is so unnerving. That's the sort of idea behind this. And again, I want to just say that this isn't sort of hardcore definite science. This is more of a sort of thought experiment. This is more sort of conjecture than it is things that we've studied. We've not done. Okay, I'm not going to say we've not done studies on zombies, but we've, to my knowledge, we have not done hardcore studies on how uncomfortable zombies make people. This is just a thought of experiment that can be applicable to robotics.
Yeah.
So the idea behind the Uncanny Valley, the reason that Masahiro Moro came up with, is that as things become, like, as humans sort of stop moving and become corpses, that is something you want to avoid. And so there's this sort of evolutionary sort of trigger, this evolutionary sort of impulse to avoid those things, mm-hmm. which presents itself as the Uncanny Valley. That was his idea. We do have some other ideas, but actually I think it might be better to leave those for a future episode.
Yeah.
Yeah? And do a whole episode on the Uncanny Valley and what we think causes it. Yeah? A little teaser, maybe?
Absolutely.
I think so, yeah.
More of this.
Yeah, more of this. This is fun. I think that brings us to the quickfire quiz.
Does it?
Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Dun, 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 dun. Creepy edition.
So you know the rules for the quickfire quiz. I'll ask one question and one question only.
Yeah.
Between the two of you. Just one. And I've got to finish asking the question before you can buzz in with your answer. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. Jamp, what do they win?
Absolutely nothing.
You gosh darn right. Yeah. So, Luke, what is your buzzer? Jamp, what is your buzzer?
Rest in peace, Jeff.
Jesus. So, my question for you both today is, who coined the phrase, the Uncanny Valley?
I knew this. I knew this would be the question, and I knew I wouldn't be able to pronounce it.
No, I also knew this, and no, I got a clue. Jamp, I think you win if you can even say it in a mispronounced.
If you get it even close, I will give it to you.
No, but that would be terribly offensive to the person who coined the term.
But it's worth it for that sweet, sweet prize, is it not?
Rest in peace, Jeff. Hatsuko Maroro.
I think that question, that answer fell into the Uncanny Valley joke.
Pronunciation alone.
Can you say it again for me, please, with a bit of confidence?
Why are you doing
just with a bit of confidence.
Hatsuko Moroto. How wrong was I?
Masahiro Mori?
No.
Not even close. You just made some vaguely Asian sounding sounds.
No.
This is why I didn't want to do it.
Well done. Okay. That's it, I think, for this episode. I don't think I have any more in me. Before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Finn TC and Ashley Miller. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references to this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support our pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find a god that does it. SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
This outro was in the Uncanny Valley. Goodbye.
I'm so sorry, Masahiro Mori. Is that right?
Masahiro, sorry.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.